You're damn right we start now. Mm-hmm. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610, as the man mentioned, John Lopez, Figgy Fig, myself, Reginald Zatatula, hanging out with you on a Wednesday in H-Town. We will continue the fruit conversation. No, I'm just playing.
I'm really sorry.
No, don't be. I was thoroughly entertained.
I'm a big grape man. I like grapes and peaches.
Grapes, peaches, good fruit. Texting your favorite fruit, 713-572-4610. I'm not opposed to just going off the rails.
That's not the question of the day.
Right off. No, that is not the question of the day. But I would love to hear that. I want to see how many people end up with like the exotic dragon fruits and things like that.
Yeah.
How many of y'all are lying?
They're posing. Yeah.
Asian pears.
They're posing.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, don't
get
sleep
the Asian pears.
Don't sleep on Asian pears.
I also want to know how many people come through with like the cotton candy grapes where I'm like, oh, you don't actually like fruit. You're just
thinking
it's candy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I did start on a judgmental tip. No, I will not stop. Shout out to the 281, Sean. They said that this conversation is needed. So I want you to know.
All right.
The conversation was needed. So there was an appreciation from the fan base.
Yeah.
As to what you were doing there. Hey, man, should be a fun Wednesday here on the program. We'll talk to a homie of mine, Karma Vitale, NFC North reporter, as we start getting ready for the Chicago Bears. Prime time, baby.
Yep.
Sunday night football coming up this Sunday. Remember, Liberty White all the way around. And something that the Texans want you to know is, hey, man, get your parking done ahead of time.
Oh, I saw that.
Because day of, parking not going to be something that you could get situated.
Yeah. They're not going to be able to buy any. You're not going to be able to buy any. On day of. So, yeah, get that done.
And get there early, too, man.
Oh, that's going to happen. On a night game?
Yeah, night. It need to be full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and
before
Adam Spillane joins us as well. Bunt, Adam Spillane.
Yeah, Spo's going to join us as well. A lot of fun things. Also, there's some giveaways coming during the course of this program, so you definitely want to keep it locked here in the Loop Sports Radio 610. You can do that in multiple ways. Get us on the Odyssey app. You can also catch us on YouTube, Sports Radio 610, twitch.tv/610Houston. And then, of course, as we mentioned, right, texting in 713-572-4610. All right, man. We've gotten through 1 week of NFL football. And there's a lot of people in the media all the way around that have a lot of love for these Texans. And they've been ranking them in all sorts of places.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to look at it, though, because we've talked about, like, we saw a matchup between the AFC champion or in the AFC championship game, rematch of that in this game. We saw, you know, the Bills, you know, we had some questions of. And they seemed to, I don't know, at least speak to some of those, whether the questions are answered or not. We'll find out over time. But we're starting to, like, figure out what the pecking order is in the AFC. So go ahead and text in addition to your fruit, shout out to the people eating watermelon and lime and peach and all those. bananas, thank you, Sean. What is your AFC pecking order right now? And where do the Texans fall within it? Because it's a little, I mean, we're doing this early off of one.
That's all we have. We
one
have one
data
week,
point.
But that's what we have.
But I do find this interesting, and I do think it's an interesting exercise to see where we kind of put them amongst the best in the league.
I'm telling you right now, first of all, there's never really an it's early guy in football, but there is in baseball, which is bizarre. Hey, it's early, guys. Hey, it's early. You don't hear that in football.
Marathon, not a sprint, is one of my favorite ones to drop out there.
Yeah, exactly. But
football, the it's early version in football is on pace guy.
Oh, yeah. But that's kind of the opposite. I guess it could be a bad thing. Like, they're on pace to blah, 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 blah. But it also could be a bad thing. But all we have is one out of 17. And in that one, I would say, obviously, Chiefs number one in the AFC.
Okay. I think that's absolutely a fair way to go about that.
I would put the Texans, too.
Ooh.
I would put the Texans, too. And the reason is, let me go through my AFC pecking order. Chiefs, then Texans. Then Bills, then Ravens, Dolphins, and I threw the Chargers in as an also-ran at the sixth position. But let's say top five would be Chiefs, Texans, Bills, Ravens, Dolphins.
Okay? So there's a few questions that immediately jumped up, which is no love for the Jets. Like, I know Aaron Rodgers wasn't like full Aaron Rodgers in FU, give me my MVPs from a couple of seasons ago. But it did seem like he still was pretty solid and was answering some of the questions. Now, like, the Aaron Rodgers that they got was still pretty good. The Aaron Rodgers that they needed in that particular game was probably, like, MVP Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly.
But there is some level between that where they should still be, I think, somewhere in this conversation.
Well, maybe somewhere in the conversation, but I wouldn't put them in the top five by any stretch. I think their defense looked, even though they're a defense-oriented team and they still have a guy to sign, for sure, if they can. But I think they gave up a lot Aaron Rodgers was good. I wouldn't say he was great by any stretch. And I didn't like the way he moved around.
Okay.
I just didn't. This is my list, you know, so you can feel free to, not you, I'm saying anyone, can feel free to disagree. But in terms of completeness, I think the Texans probably looked the most complete. The Bills were a Josh Allen, you know, production.
Yeah, they sure were.
The Ravens were okay. They have Lamar Jackson. They have Derrick Henry. They look like they could be right there at the very top. I thought it was the epitome of a team that started slow. They didn't quite have everything that you would need. And then you go Dolphins. Okay, Dolphins, you know, we're down. They have incredible speed. They're injured. Mostert's not going to play tomorrow night. I think the Texans are number two. And then the other reason, Reggie, I think that they're number two, and I was talking to you guys about this before the game, most everywhere with this Texan squad, I think it's safe to say they're going to get better. Outside of running game, they can't get better there.
It's funny.
Or could they?
Buddy, that'd be something insane. I just, every time I think of the running game, I can visibly see the box score.
Yeah.
30 carries, 159.
Yeah.
Touchdown, and it makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, and we'll get into that. Okay, so running game, they can't get better there. I think they can get better at receiver as a group. Obviously, Nico had his game, but they can get better at receiver. Stephon, Tank Dell, you know, had his end arounds and all that stuff, but I think the group can get better. I think they can get better at quarterback, which is terrifying if you're an opponent of the Houston Texans, because he was really, really good. I think fourth highest quarterback rating in the entire league.
Yeah, you said that.
In week one, but I still think they can get better. I think they can get better at the defensive end positions because the only two sacks they had were from the interior defensive line.
And I think that was in some part the way that you play that particular quarterback, right? That particular quarterback has, poses such a threat with his legs and with the consideration that you have also with Jonathan Taylor, where I don't know that they could be full send. I think that it was more of a consideration of contain while also, you know, then secondarily or maybe, you know, in a way that's a little pared back from any other quarterback.
Yeah.
Then you're also trying to apply that pressure to go get them. So if you do have Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson Jr. pinning their ears back, I do imagine that you can go higher there as well.
Yeah, but wait, there's more. Okay. I think they can get better on the interior defensive line, which was outstanding. But that's without their best one.
Well, yeah, it's like when Danico Autry gets back after 6 weeks, that's definitely another or five more weeks at this point. Let's do the countdown.
And they can get better at linebacker, and they can get better in the secondary. And not only can they get better in all these positions, all these position groups, I think it's safe to say they will get better based on who you're talking about. You're talking about, you know, obviously at receiver, we know the threesome. Quarterback, we know who that is and how good he can get. Interior at linebacker, Christian Harris is coming back. In the secondary, I think they're going to – there's maybe a question at safety, but I think these cornerbacks are going to be more than fine.
And it's quite possible that the answer might be more Kalen Bullock.
And more – he might start. Might play more than – what was it? 25 snaps.
I think that was good for just under 50% of snaps, if I remember correctly. I'll have to open up the game book one more time.
Yeah, so if we are judging only on week one, it's the Chiefs. And then it's the Texans.
Sorry, 56% of the defensive snaps is Kalen Bullock.
There you go. The Texans right now, I think, are second in the pecking order. I mean, for those reasons.
That's interesting. Some other things that came in on the text line. Again, that number to text is 713-572-4610 from the 281. They're kind of in the same space as you. KC, clearly one. Texans in Baltimore, it seems like they have as interchangeable twos. So I guess we'll go tied for two there. Chargers fourth, and then everyone else. A lot of love for the Chargers there. From 713, probably have to put Chiefs at one, then Ravens two, because the Chiefs barely squeaked out of that game. And then they have Texans, Bills, Dolphins. Another one, 719. Chiefs, Houston, Ravens, Bills. A lot of people in that similar vein. Mm-hmm. I think I lean a little bit more towards the people that have the Ravens second there as well. I think that there's clearly some more things to be done. And then also when it comes defensively, but then also going up against the Chiefs are going to make you look a little bit less than what you are.
For sure.
But I think that I probably, and I feel kind of amazed that I'm going this far already, I probably start talking about the Texans third there, right? Yeah. Like, and then I will introduce the Bills, and I still think the Jets are a little bit better than what they displayed. But it really does feel like when you get the Bengals, I don't know. It feels like they really do have issues. I don't know how much of that is slow start, but I do think they have issues. We start talking about them maybe like 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, the Texans look like they are establishing themselves and putting them in that place where they're, I mean, either right in that elite tier or right off that elite tier, which kind of speaks to after we've gotten a couple of days away from the initial like first knee-jerk reactions of Monday.
Yeah.
We're still kind of in the same place that you were talking about, or actually not even one day or a couple days. You mentioned this on Thursday or a Friday after the Thursday night game that kicked this things off, right, between the Ravens and the Chiefs. You were like, Texans aren't far from those teams.
No, they're in the same class.
And, I mean, half a week later, it does feel like, most people are in that same place where the Texans are not far off and they're in or just around that same class of play.
And you can argue... again, not just you, everyone listening, you can argue, well, you say they're going to get better at all these positions, position groups, and I do believe that. So to figure to be the other teams getting better where they showed some weakness. And I get that. But I think part of it is, like, let's look at the Ravens. Derrick Henry in 8, 10, 12 weeks. Is he going to be appreciably better? And is that running game going to be appreciably better?
I'm not certain, but I also found it really interesting. John Harbaugh, to make sure that I actually get the right one when I mention them. John Harbaugh apparently, after the game this weekend, mentioned that they did not sign him to be the Derrick Henry of old, where he gets Joe Mixon like 30 carries. They signed him to be a part of a full scheme, and I do think that that's really interesting there. So I don't know how much we have to talk about that when it comes to is he going to be appreciably better or is he going to be appreciably worse, right? Well, which direction that goes, I'm not sure how much that speaks to it. I do think that having a new defensive coordinator in Zach Orr is something that they're going to have some level of appreciation there. That's one of the teams that you're going, maybe there's some level of build up.
Yeah.
Bills, I do wonder, especially with how many young players that they are stepping in into those roles, because they had let some guys go that they had that were veterans that they knew the positions and the roles. I do wonder what level of growth that they have available to them. And of course, the Chargers are just a team that is starting up with Jim Harbaugh stepping in. So like maybe there's some level of appreciable growth. Those are the ones that immediately come to mind on like who also has chances to get better.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you mentioned the Bills because they do have young players and they do. You can easily argue they figure to get better as well. But will Josh Allen be this? Will he have to do this more often than not and just put the team on his back by himself almost?
And will Josh Allen be consistent in that way? Because remember, like one of the reasons why Anthony Richardson has been able to garner the level of interest and acclaim is because I think Josh Allen forced us to change the way that we view guys like this that are like big arm but aren't accurate, because accuracy is one of those things that we frequently viewed as something that was just not going to develop, right?
Yeah.
If you didn't have it, you were not going to get there. And Josh Allen came out here and said, psych! Like that is something that apparently can't get better. And so, but I do wonder, like, does that fall back? Because one of the things that helped him to get appreciably better, to keep using a word over the course of this segment, was Stephon Diggs getting there.
Yes.
And giving him an intermediate guy to throw to that really changed the way the defense has played them and gave him a comfort zone. And I do wonder, without Stephon Diggs, you got it in week one, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say that it's impossible that it'll be there. Will it continue to be there at that level? Will he do that consistently? Or will you have bonehead Josh Allen pop up from time to time?
Exactly. And you know, really the only two teams that I would put maybe in the same category as the Texans, because I think the Ravens have, and the word you know, a lot of people use is a ceiling, you know. I think the Bills have a ceiling. I think the two teams that I might put in that same class as the Texans, as like not only were they really good, but they figure to get better in certain areas and probably will, are the Dolphins and the Chargers. The Chargers simply because Jim Harbaugh wins. and he's got, you know, who knows what he's going to end up doing with Herbert and some receivers there, et cetera. And the Dolphins, because even though I think Tua has something of a ceiling, I think that speed and their, you know, the way that they're playing, how they play the game now, it doesn't help them that Mostert got hurt.
Yeah.
But I think the Dolphins could get better. So, yeah, I think I feel pretty strongly about it. I think it's Chiefs, Texans, and then we can mix and match behind that Ravens, Bills, etc.
It's kind of incredible to keep looking at this team and realizing, hey, yeah,
they're in that class.
They are in that class. Yeah. But I do think that also that then requires us to kind of put them up with the Uncle Ben Spider-Man situation of where, you know, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, now that we view them with that level in that class of team, the rubric has to also change with the ways that we grade them. So I'm very intrigued, and that's also where I will keep thinking about the big play potential that was there in game one and seeing if that continues over time through the course of the season. But man, fun to see that it seems like a lot of people immediately top three, top four with your Texans. And maybe we're riding high off of a week one win versus the Colts, but it does feel valid, at least at this very moment. So shout out to the Texans in the AFC. You're listening to In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Some people mentioned horse apples. Somebody said their favorite fruit is beer. That does not count. from the 281, as a Mexican, lemon with salt. Okay. 281, bananas for sure, no muscle cramps. I appreciate that.
Watermelon with salt is really good.
Yeah. Is watermelon a tajin possibility there?
It could be, but I usually just put salt.
Okay, very good. I was just asking, you know. I guess keep sending those fruits in that you like, I guess. We can keep doing that. I will guarantee you, I will ask the favorite fruit of our next guest who will be joining us, Karma Vitale. Covers the NFC North for Fox Sports. She's going to talk to us as we start getting ready for Texans-Bears Sunday night. We'll do that next.
Biggie, let's hit him big time.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez and Reggie Atitula. Always live.
Love it. Love it.
Always local.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
That's right. In the loop, Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, our guy Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, hanging out with you. Cantaloupe with black pepper, says the 936.
Never had that.
And someone also came at you.
Black
directly.
Pepper.
Yeah,
I never had that.
Would not have guessed. And then from the 713, our guy Ocho said, you can't trust people who put salt on watermelon.
Well, I put salt on watermelon. That, you can trust
that was,
me.
That, I don't know. I think the implication was that we can't. Keep an eye on you. Someone to always keep an eye on, our next guest joined us on the hotline. She's a friend, very good reporter, good at her job. NFC North reporter, mind you, for Fox Sports. And she's here to give us a little bit of insight into the Chicago Bears as we gear up for Sunday Night Football here at NRG Stadium. Her name is Carmen Vitale. Carm, how you doing?
I'm great, Reg. How are you?
Doing pretty well. We begin by asking you, and I'm sure you know, you yourself, Dave, know that how I like to do this. A question that has nothing to do with football. Your favorite fruit is, and please don't give me some basic like apple.
No, it's pineapple.
Okay.
Oh, pineapple.
Good fruit.
They're hit and miss, though, man.
Are they?
Yeah, you gotta get organic.
If you, like, I feel like sometimes, like, if you have, like, the hotel breakfast and stuff, the pineapple is, like, less than stellar, but we were in Hawaii this summer, and it was just, like, the best thing ever. It's, like, when pineapple's good, there's nothing better.
Okay, so I like that on the idea of what's the best on the high end, what's the best on average then for you? Like, what's the favorite on average when you're like, I don't know if I can trust this pineapple?
Bananas. I like bananas.
Okay.
I probably eat the most bananas. And, like, you can do so many things with them. Like, I put, like, chocolate almond butter on them, or we bake banana bread. It's so good.
Okay, so speaking of, I don't want to assume by that. I do think that, like, banana bread now has me hungry, to be completely honest. But high end versus, like, what the average will be is kind of, in my mind, a question that I'm asking about Caleb Williams and what this team looks like with the Bears. I mean, after a performance that was kind of lackluster from him, but you got to win, what are you viewing, and what is, like, the city of Chicago viewing, you know, the performance in week one from their number one overall quarterback?
Yeah, well, listen, like, this whole offseason, I've been trying to temper expectations for Chicago Bears fans, given that there was so much new on this offense. And Caleb Williams, at the end of the day, is still a rookie. And I didn't want to put a cap on his ceiling at all, because I think that he's a phenomenal player. He's the best prospect we've seen in years at the quarterback position. But that doesn't negate the fact that it's a new scheme in Chicago under Shane Waldron. He has new weapons in Keenan Allen and now Roma Dunze and DeAndre Swift. And we saw, like, what we saw on Sunday was just an offense that isn't used to playing together. I mean, Keenan Allen only caught 4 of the 11 targets that were thrown his way. And it's just because the timing wasn't quite there on quite a few of them. And I think if Caleb Williams makes two more throws to Keenan Allen. His stat line looks better. The offense feels better about actually scoring an offensive touchdown. And you feel better about this team totally, but that's literally the difference in this game. And so I'm not worried necessarily about the Chicago offense, especially given the fact that the Bears still won that game against the Titans after after not scoring an offensive touchdown. I mean, it was the defense and special teams that, you know, kicked in. And if you can still win games when the offense struggles that badly, I feel good about this team as a whole.
Look, I hear you on that, and I'm not down on Caleb Williams at all as a prospect. But I am old enough to remember a number one overall pick behind a really bad offensive line, and his name was David Carr, and he became ultimately shell-shocked by it. And I'm not saying that's apples to apples. We're back on fruit, by the way. But I'm not saying that's apples to apples. But the interior offensive line in particular just looked like it's going to be a long season for him running around.
Yeah, what I didn't like, but what I also saw from other teams in week one was that they rotated the right guard between Nate Davis and Ryan Bates, and I'm never a fan of rotating your offensive line. I don't know whether this is a symptom of the fact that we have a shorter preseason now, and that teams just really don't have their front five solidified on offense necessarily going into week one. But I didn't like that because that just breaks up the continuity, you know, for the guys on either side of the player that's being rotated. You know, they have to adjust to the player that's now in there. I do think that this Tennessee defensive front, especially with the rookie Tavondre Sweat, I mean, that's a big, big dude. And talking to some of the offensive linemen in the locker room after the game, he was a problem. And just kind of I think they weren't expecting him to be as far along as he was as far as knowing what to do with his hands and all that kind of stuff, and just had the brute strength that he has. So that interior really suffered just given the fact that I think that Tennessee front is going to be a lot better than people are giving it credit for, which is something that Houston Texans should probably look out for too later on in the season.
We're talking to Carmen Vitale. She is the NFC North reporter for Fox Sports. And Carmen, when it comes to Caleb Williams and his receivers, Roma Dunze was one of the big gets to make sure that he is comfortable. We know that he kind of got rolled up on. What is the status report on him, and what's the likelihood, at least at this point, that he plays Sunday night?
Yeah, it's going. Matt Eberflus said that he's kind of a week to week scenario right now. He's got the MCL sprain. I think you do want to be careful, just given the fact that you do have depth in the receiver room. You have Keenan Allen, you have DJ Moore, and you have DeAndre Swift for those kind of check down options. And Shane Waldron likes to use his tight ends as well. So we didn't see a whole lot from Cole Kmet, and that's something that in the preseason it looked like Caleb was really comfortable with him. You did see Gerald Everett out there, who was with Shane Waldron in Seattle. So I think that there's more than enough to make up for if you want to be cautious with Roma Dunze, which I think you do want to be because he's so young. You don't want to push him and kind of, again, like when you talk about these players' development, especially early in the league, it's so important to really, you know, be careful with them and make sure that they're laying a good foundation, and playing through an injury like that is not a way to do it, especially when you don't desperately need him. You know, so I would be very surprised if he plays this weekend.
Okay. You know, Carmen, one thing, I said this before the season even began, I kind of felt bad for Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and all these rookie quarterbacks because CJ Stroud kind of ruined it for everyone. like he really did. And with the expectations in Chicago and the expectations on Caleb Williams, it almost seems unfair, doesn't it, to say, okay, here comes the next C.J. Stroud with Caleb Williams. You gotta temper all that.
You do, and I'd spend, again, all offseason doing that, saying that C.J. Stroud is the exception, not the norm. Can Caleb Williams potentially have a season like that? Absolutely. Should we expect him to? No, we shouldn't, because, again, that is just, we just don't see that very often, and what C.J. Stroud did last year cannot be overstated. But at the same time, we're also forgetting that there were bumps in the road for CJ. He did have games where he didn't pass for a touchdown. He did have games where he struggled. I mean, the Texans lost to the Panthers last year. And that is going to happen. Progress is not linear. And what was so encouraging about CJ is that, you know, you saw him kind of get comfortable in real time as the season went on. And then when it mattered, you know, taking advantage of a collapse by Jacksonville in the division that you got to get into the playoffs and get into the postseason and have actual team success. That's the other thing that I've kind of cautioned against is, again, there is so much new on this team. This roster has turned over in a pretty small amount of time in Chicago. I mean, there's like three guys that are left over from Ryan Pace's regime before Ryan Poles. And so that's just going to take a little bit of time to gel, and you're going to see these ups and downs. And hopefully by the end, you do kind of put it together. But also, I'm not expecting necessarily playoffs. Again, expecting playoffs for the Bears, not that it can't happen, when you also have such a strong division with the Packers and the Lions that you kind of had to get through and play twice a year.
Well, I mean, thankfully, I guess for the Texans in some ways, the Bears, whatever development they have, this is really early in their process. So I imagine that you're going to see a really easily dominable, I guess, for lack of a better word, team here. But I want to talk about the defense of this Bears team, because like over the last year, been pretty solid when it comes to like pass defense, but run defense not really solid. And I don't know if you saw, but Joe Mixon put up a masterclass. Like, what should we expect defensively against this Texans team?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the blemish on the defense's performance last week against Tennessee, where Tony Pollard, who's newly minted Tennessee Titan, Tony Pollard was running all over this Bears defense, but they did clamp down when it mattered. And I mean, at the end of the day, the Titans only scored 17 points. The Bears got turnovers because of that secondary. Jalen Johnson, I think, had the best grade against single coverage of any player last week. And that's something that the Bears really rely on, is their pass defense to kind of contain that, because both the defensive front and the back level of the defense will work in tandem with each other. I do think they need to generate more pressure. I did see some good things from Jerron Dexter and Andrew Billings as far as, just kind of quarterback hurries, quarterback pressures, generating that from the interior and making Will Levis uncomfortable. Now, CJ Stroud is not Will Levis.
No, he's not.
So it's going to be a little bit different. And I think what this game is really going to come down to, more than even the run defense, is just the Bears' third down defense in general, because last week, I think I saw CJ Stroud was 9 for 9 in third and fourth down passing.
Correct.
I mean, his stats were off the chart, and in those clutch situations. So you're really going to need to clamp down on third down, which is something they were able to do against Tennessee. But again, this is a different beast. This is a different animal. This is a team that's much further along. So I think that's kind of what I'm going to watch for as far as a matchup, is the Bears' third down defense specifically against what the Texans are going to try to do against them.
All right, real quick, on the division, you do cover the division. Obviously, Jordan Love out, and they'd say, 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. The Lions, it's theirs to win, or do you see someone sneaking up on them?
No, I mean, I do. I have been saying that I still think this is the Lions division. I don't really foresee the Packers having that much of a setback, even with Jordan Love injured. The Packers reportedly aren't bringing anybody else in, and that tells me that they're confident that it's more of a 2 to 3 week timeline for Jordan Love. Now, Matt LaFleur wouldn't even rule out him playing this week, but I think that's just, gamesmanship with the Colts, trying to get them to prepare for multiple scenarios. But I don't think that the Packers in the long run are going to be hampered too much by this injury. And once Jordan Love comes back, I mean, both the Packers and the Lions are still going to go at it as far as who's going to win this division. But I do love the Lions. I just think that they not only have all the talent on the field, and especially after Brad Holmes went out and got Carlton Davis, first two picks were corners too. He's fielding a complete secondary come hell or high water. But I do think they have these intangibles where Dan Campbell is such a wonderful leader of men. He's got those guys just ready to run through a brick wall at any moment. He's got those fans ready to run through a brick wall. And all of that stuff kind of matters when you get late in the season. And if you have a team that believes in itself just to a crazy degree, that's what's going to get you through the postseason. That's what separates the elite teams from the great teams when it comes to playoff football. So I'm really excited for the Lions. I really hope that this is their year, because I just think that the fans and the city of Detroit deserve it. It's been a long time coming, obviously, and they were so close last year, and they're using that as motivation this year.
Carmen Vitale, NFC North reporter is the word I was looking for that I stumbled on there. Reporter. You use that from time to time, joining us here in Loop Sports Radio 610. Carm, I appreciate you giving us a little bit of time. Travel safe.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Carmen Vitale.
Yeah, the Caleb Williams thing, and you don't give up early, but boy, you know, it's going to be interesting, and the pressure of him with the C.J. Stroud stuff, it's everywhere.
Yeah, literally in the building against C.J. Stroud it's on everywhere. Sunday night. That's, yeah.
You know they're going to be talking about it.
Oh, for
Sunday
sure.
Sunday night football.
Yeah, that's going to be, Collinsworth's going to bring that up quite a bit of times, like the comparison between those two. And yeah, if you think about it, those first few games for C.J. Stroud, like obviously not the absolute best. It's going to be real tough for Caleb Williams to come in and have that type of performance against this Texans team that has already glowed up in such a big way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did find it interesting that she mentioned third down defense for the
everybody
for the
see
Bears.
That.
And yeah, that I'm going to be doing a little bit of a looking into what that looks like or what that looked like for the Bears and how that might, you know, transfer on Sunday night. But there you go. Appreciate Carmen joining us, talking about this game that's coming up, Sunday Night Football. Another guy who will join us during the course of this, we're having all the guests. Our guy, Astros insider Adam Spillane, will join us next. Let's do that.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Who they want? Baseball Spo.
You know what it is. Baseball Spo. Adam Spillane, our Astros insider, joining us in the loop on Sports Radio 610. What's happening, my man?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Terrific.
You know, okay, I was like, I wanted to, I realized I cut you off, didn't let you talk to our guy Spo.
Terrific.
let's talk about these Astros after 12 inning, extra inning loss, unfortunately, to the A's. A team that I know that you have become a little bit of a laughingstock. They've been playing above 500 baseball since the break, right?
They've been the second best team in the AL West here since the break. And it's not just the break. I think it even goes back longer than that. No, they're frisky. They can really hit. You know, they don't have a lot of names in that lineup, but those guys can hit. You know, Brent Rooker is, you know, he might have a 900 OPS at this point in the year. Lawrence Butler didn't even play for them yesterday. He's had a great year. They've gotten a lot out of, like, J.J. Bladé coming over from the Marlins, a guy who was drafted really high. So that lineup up and down can really swing the bats. And the fact that you got a really good start out of Spencer Arrighetti and then the bullpen was really good last night, that's a positive sign. That's good.
Yeah, look, I yesterday was one of those games where, okay, it's going to happen. They're playing pretty good baseball. You've got the division pretty much locked up. You're not going to get to the number two seed. So it's going to happen and you move on. My thing, and I was mentioning it before the show, is you can't waste some of these things that you had, the opportunity you had yesterday, particularly defensively. And that is, to me, still the story with this team, right?
Yeah, it's not a good defensive team. This is something that they've really held their hat on for a long, long time as being an elite defensive team. And you look at the defense that they had out there last night. The two middle infielders, Jeremy Peña, Jose Altuve, are rated as basically two of the worst at their position this season. You know, they've been better in the past. Peña obviously won a Gold Glove a couple of years ago. He was good last year. He's been awful this year. Altuve doesn't have a lot of errors this year, but he doesn't get to a lot of balls either. And obviously the throws haven't been very good. He's not good at that position. And then you look, everybody else, the first baseman last night was a catcher, and he cost them two runs. The left fielder is a DH. The center fielder is really good. The right, or at least the guy who started the game. The right fielder that started the game last night, Chaz McCormick, has a left fielder's arm. So it's just not a very good defensive club, and you can't afford to give good teams extra outs. You can't afford to give good teams runs. They did not play against a good team yesterday. They gave that team two runs, and it cost them the game. So like, they've got to be able to clean that up. The defense will get better. Eventually, Kyle Tucker is going to move back to right field.
Yeah.
That will allow, you know, some of the other pieces to be a little bit more settled, but it's still not going to be a great defensive team, especially at first base. You forget how good Yuli Gurriel was at first base. This was a Gold Glove caliber first baseman, and they are replacing him with John Singleton, who's bad at first base, and a couple catchers. Like, that's not good. But the two middle infielders, Altuve and Peña, must play better.
Yeah, I mean, how much better is the bar for what you need, especially when you consider, like, what has been glowing about this team has actually been starting pitching, particularly. I mean, they've been incredible, especially since the break, when it comes to pitching, at top of a lot of metrics that really matter, as I was reading yesterday. What is that baseline do we kind of need to get to? And I understand that that's not something that you can kind of throw out a number for, but like, how would you kind of describe the baseline of defense that's necessary to really compete in the way that
I just think you almost want to get to league average. Just play league average defense at this point, because it's better than what you're putting out there right now. And that's just the problem that they run into, is that I don't know how good Kyle Tucker will be in right field once he gets out there, because we really haven't seen him like have to sprint
at
100%. He went first to home on that play in the ninth inning on Sunday, but I don't know if he was going max speed. So I don't know if he's had to really turn it on. And at some point, we're going to see him in right field, and he's going to have to turn it on then. We'll have to see if he can do it, and we'll have to see like how he recovers from doing that, because I think that's still one of the big questions that's out there for him. But once you get him into right field, that opens up DH for Alvarez. It opens up DH for Yiner Diaz on days when he doesn't catch. So that's a big thing right now. And then you have to hope that Alex Bregman's elbow holds up, because he's had to have some DH days also because of some of the issues that he's had with his elbow. So they're kind of in that weird spot where their best defenders are two guys that aren't 100% healthy right now, and they're having to DH a lot.
What's your starting rotation in the postseason if you had to do it today?
For the wild card series, which is probably what they're going to run into right now, it would be Framber, Hunter Brown, and Kikuchi.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty clear at this point. You know, I thought about maybe having Hunter Brown as like a bullpen weapon, but I think that he's been so good, and the guys that after you get to the top three, you know, the top three have really separated themselves. So to me, Hunter Brown has earned the opportunity to start a playoff game. I think that's pretty clear. If you get to the division series, that fourth starter, if you need a fourth starter, it's open right now. And I think that you're just kind of waiting to see if Justin Verlander can get things together to take one of those spots. If he can't, then you go to either Arrigetti or Blanco. And I think that's not an easy decision between those two. Blanco has overall had the better year. Arrigetti, at least recently, has been the better pitcher. So I'm curious to see how Blanco looks these next couple of starts after they skipped his turn in the rotation to give him a little bit of a breather.
Is there any level of, I don't know, ease in making that decision, knowing that you have one or the other that you can maybe piggyback in a start in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But you still want to be able to get off to a good start. Like, you don't want to throw somebody out there and he gives up, you know, three runs in the first inning, and now all of a sudden you're trying to dig yourself out of a hole. But obviously, I think if you ask them, they hope that Justin Verlander shows something in these next three starts to make that decision much, much easier.
Yeah.
And then you also hope that, hey, we can just win the first three games and not have to worry about it. So I think that's probably the preferred method for them right now. But I think what they would prefer is that Justin Verlander in these next three starts shows a little more than what he has shown so far, and that he takes one of those spots.
If he doesn't take an appreciable step, what do you do with the postseason roster?
He's not on it. I think that he just can't be on it.
Because he's not going to come out of the pen.
I mean, he could. I don't think that he will. It's not something that he's done at any point in his career. And I do think that they have other guys in that bullpen that you say they, frankly, are better or better fits for that role. I think that when you get to the wild card series, they would probably carry 11 pitchers. I don't think that he would be among the 11. And then once you get to the division series, you know, maybe you're looking at 12 pitchers. I don't think that he would be. I think that they have the other five starters would make the roster, and then I think that they easily have seven relievers in that bullpen that they could go to and not have to use him. But again, he's got three starts, and that's, you know, he's got time to try and work this stuff out. The fact that the velocity was good on Sunday, that's important. But also what is kind of disconcerting is that he's gotten progress. The results have gotten worse with each start since he's got come off the IL. His best start was the first start, and then it's been all downhill since. And while the velocity again was very good against the Diamondbacks on Sunday, the results were the worst that he's ever had as an Astros starting pitcher.
This was a one-run loss, an extra innings loss, and Astros 15-25 on the season in one-run games, 8-8 since the break, though. What is your general reaction to that feeling? I know that defense is going to play a large part in how some of that happens, but what's your feeling, especially when you consider postseason baseball can be one-run baseball?
Yeah, a lot of it's luck, to be honest with you. That's just kind of what one-run baseball tends to be. I mean, you look, I think in 2022, they were a pretty bad team in one-run games during the regular season, and then basically that entire postseason run was games that they won by one run or two runs.
Yeah.
So I think that more than anything, it tends to be luck. It tends to be, hey, you get a break here or a break there. The other team gets a break here, a break there. I think that probably matters more than anything. It'd be nice to start winning some of those games, but like, they're bad in extra innings. Well, the extra innings rules revert back to the old ways once you get to the playoffs. So you don't have to worry about the runner at second base once you get to postseason play. So I don't read a whole lot into the one-run stuff. I think it does tend to be more luck than anything else, but the fact that they're where they are when they are as bad as they've been in one-run games is pretty remarkable.
Hunter Brown on the mound tonight for the Astros versus the A's. What should we expect?
probably just what you've seen from him since the end of April, where he has been one of the best starting pitchers in all of baseball, and he has really solidified his spot within the organization. I really thought going into the season he was probably one of their five most important players just because of the prospect status that he had and the fact that he's under team control now for four more years after this one. So you really needed him to like blossom into what they thought he was going to be, and it looked bad for that first month. But you know, that the last three, 4 months, he has shown that he is top end starting pitcher in this league right now. And you know, he's gained confidence, it seems like, with every single start. He just comes after hitters. He's gotten so much more efficient with everything. So I think that you look at all the things that we've seen this season, Hunter Brown turning into a legit starting pitcher is probably the most important development of the year.
Yeah, super excited for that. Again, 7:10 first pitch when it comes to Astros A's at the Juice Box. Appreciate you, Spo.
Sure thing.
Always enjoy it on Wednesdays. Yeah. And remember, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. There you go. You're in the loop. Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL, including some news when it comes to running backs being out, and also Bill Belichick might not like this guy. We'll talk about it next.